Okay, if we can. Can we just hear maybe two, just for sake of time, and then I'll hold forth a bit more to give you something else to puzzle about. And then we'll look at sort of the approach for the next 10 weeks or so, and what you do in the off weeks when we're not as a large group, right? How can you reflect or deepen your reflection on an analysis? So some of you have those skills. Okay, wait, just a couple of comments. Yes, go ahead. So this is the alternative, right? These are the things that aren't. You got it, yeah. Okay. Any other?
Well, I was thinking, especially living on Vancouver Island, I think I certainly live with a sense that so much of what we use every day and consume every day comes from elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's been other studies that have been done around how vulnerable we are to food production. Food sources, or people who've tried the 100-mile diet by staying, you know, looking for food sources and how difficult that is.
Right.
I think of all the telecommunications and all the, you know, the computer, cell phone, internet connections that we all look to almost as a given now, but they're all organized and structured to have us be dependent on certain providers.
Yeah, one of the things some of my students have been doing is deliberately trying to do an electronic Sabbath. Like, even just for one day a week would be good. You know, can you disconnect from your devices? You know, maybe that you'll expand those times, you know, and realize, hey, this is actually quite a new thing. People used to go fishing, right, or something. And deliberately also to not be connected, because then you reconnect to the land. So I think, yeah, some of our devices, they're wonderful and all this kind of stuff, but also can be a form of disconnection again, right? So you can work both ways. Yeah. But anyhow, so, yeah, go ahead.
We were talking about how difficult it is to try to find clothes that are made locally and not from factories where people get paid a pittance and left to die.
Yeah, it's interesting. One probably should distinguish between, you know, a corporate structure like a hospital needs a collective, right? So it isn't, you know, so Margaret Thatcher, there's no society, it's just individuals at the bowl. We all depended on collective action, whether we want a hospital or whatever, a school or whatever, right? And that's where we use occupations and these kind of things for, right? I mean, so there is a whole collective dimension to life, and we have to, therefore, and whether you create a corporate structure, the problem becomes that we have a very simple tool called a corporation, which gets the status of person, fighting against individuals whose land, water, air gets contaminated, and the individual has to fight against an actually impersonal structure whose mandate is they have to maximize the profit for the shareholders. As a matter of fact, they can be sued as the board if they do not maximize the profit. Now, at what point does protecting the community, protecting the land, the people, you know, whatever, with other words, have a zero negative environmental impact, when would that ever become the most economic, the feasible? As a matter of fact, our economists at the University of Alberta will show us, you know, there's a certain graph. Yes, we'll do economic damage abatement up to this level. Beyond that, it's just not economically feasible. Right? So it's that simple structure of the global corporation that has to maximize profit for the shareholders that is siphoning up. Whereas people, you know, our resources, our communities, etc., whereas it used to be people actually working in small scale, and they still work, you know, for your hospitals or for your medical or whatever, you still work collectively. So it's not the one over against the other, but we have to distinguish which particular corporation. In this case, it's this very simple tool that we've designed. It's just too simplistic. Life is way more complex. Nature is way more complex. And if you put a simple vacuum cleaner on nature, you know, or even the fishing fleets, right? They drag everything and then throw away everything else that isn't fitting into what they're selling right now. I mean, that's unbelievably, it's against the first principle, and we'll read that of sustainability, is you cannot waste anything. Like, everything has its role. Yes?
You know,
well, that's a good point. We are definitely connected, but even when the majority, I mean, Carl Malcolm chair, when we talk about mining and extraction, their experiences in Peru, even when all the people say, no, we don't want it, or in Guatemala, or Tasmania, or more particularly in Colombia now, the people say, no, we don't want it here. So whom are they serving? They're not serving the local people, right? They are serving the shareholder, and obviously, yes, they will ship that copper or gold or whatever to us. So they have become, as an empire, they have become beyond the status, right, of serving us. They have a very narrow set of interests, and we use them, but they have a very narrow set of interests that ultimately they're serving. It isn't, yeah, this is what we want, this is democratic, it's not good by nature, anti-democratic. You do not want a democratic control. We're saying, you can't run the pipeline here, you can't do it this way, you have to actually, you know, build them up to the safety standard, et cetera, et cetera. No, that violates, you know, the interests of, no, we have to get, you know, either this stuff to market, whether people want it or not. So it becomes complicated, but I take your point totally. We are totally complicit, as, you know, as we're saying, this is one area of life where we aren't being served, you know, by the global corporations, you know, and that point, yeah, but. No, so what it basically shows, we are so intermeshed, right? And again, rather than blaming the corporate, I'm just saying it's a very simplistic tool that we've come up, an economic, very simplistic tool, the global corporation. That isn't what, in fact, controls our economies for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. It's actually only in a very, very short time. It's probably, like, maybe 150 years where they started creating stronger and stronger and more ascendancy. So with others, humans have been able to do economy in a different way. And maybe to anticipate where Wendell Berry would go, is the first level of economy has to be the land economy, right? So what protects the land and its community? If whatever you're doing destroys our land, or our water, or our air, it's not an economy, it's an anti-economy. And it's a very powerful tool of an anti-economy. Economy means you're husbanding. You're husbanding the soil. So, you know, and that's why, I mean, you know, he deliberately went back to the farm, although, you know, he writes academically and blah, blah, blah. He was teaching in New York, and then he did a postdoc or something in Stanford before. But deliberately went back to the farm in Kentucky, and he says, but the farm teaches me way more. That life is so complex that these simple formulas that come, in his case, from Washington, D.C., will never actually meet the complexity of what we need to live without destroying. So that's one of the hardest skills. You know, Aldo Leopold said, yeah, we can split the atom, you know, we can do all these amazing things, but we haven't learned the hardest task for humans. How do you deal with any little piece of land, you know, to feed and clothe and shelter ourselves without ultimately destroying it? And, you know, you can read the short history of progress by Ronald Wright or whatever, right, and it shows all the big civilizations, usually when they were in their big powers, they actually undercut the basis of their whatever. So that's the point, the main point that I'm trying to make by looking at our dependency. But you're totally right. It is so much, it's able to feed into our own greed. You know, if you wanted the Christian tradition, depending on how it's counted and whose version of the tradition, but in the Ten Commandments, in the Luther tradition, the last two are about coveting. And our whole economy is based on coveting. Right? Yes, sir. Exactly, and that's the point. So for us to see, to move forward with some kind of a hope, is how do we identify all the different levels, right? And each one can probably this other one, where we are actually either being controlled or manipulated, and then how do we actually, so we have to work as individuals and as communities, you know, and I'll get to there in a minute, as a way of getting a counter voice. I mean, one of the things, I mean, you know, tiny little step when our oldest son was 18 months old, you know, I suggested to Pat, why don't we give away our television? You know, Pat grew up with a television, so it's like saying, you know, honey, why don't we throw away the toilet, you know, kind of, and maybe that would have been wise too, both conference and college or whatever. But anyhow, but of course, Pat has been the most ardent advocate of no TV in the house, because, of course, why would you invite, you know, you want to see a good show, but all the other stuff that goes along, or there's a lot of mediocrity, of course, as well. Anyhow, so that's part of our collective thinking, is how do we both identify where are we manipulated, and then how do we build a community that actually doesn't as easily, that none of us are going to be pure, we don't come out of the screen, but we can, in fact, make changes. Like, humans created this society, not everybody fell for Hitler's propaganda. And we've got as probably as powerful a propaganda machine because it's more seductive. It's more rewarding. It's not as crude. It's not as forceful. It doesn't need, you know, Gestapo's running around or whatever. So how do we do that? How do we create our own version of resistance, but not just as a fight against, as Carmela's saying, right? So that's what we're trying to get at.